Good day, and welcome to the LTC Properties, Inc. 4Q14 Analyst and Investor Call and Webcast. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on a touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Before management begins its presentation, please know that today's comments, including the question and answer session, may include forward-looking statements subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results and events to differ materially. These risks and uncertainties are detailed in the LTC Properties filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission from time to time, including the company's most recent 10-K dated December 31st, 2014. Please also note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Wendy Simpson, Chairman, CEO, and President. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Denise. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. This morning, Pam Kessler, our CFO, will start our presentation with comments on our financial results for 2014 fourth quarter and the year-end. After Pam's comments, Clint Malin, our Chief Investment Officer, will talk about transactions that closed in and subsequent to the fourth quarter, as well as our current outlook for 2015 investments. At this time, I'll turn it over to Pam. Pam?
Thank you, Wendy. Normalized FFO increased 4% for the fourth quarter of 2014 to $22.8 million, or $0.64 per share on a fully diluted basis, from $21.9 million or $0.62 per fully diluted share a year ago. Revenues for the quarter increased nearly 8%, or $2.2 million year-over-year, primarily reflecting investments made in the second half of 2013, along with completed development and capital improvement projects in 2014. Fourth quarter interest expense was $3.7 million, an increase of $831,000 over the comparable 2013 quarter, due primarily to the sale of senior unsecured notes to fund acquisitions and development. The reduction in the provision for doubtful accounts this year reflects loan payoffs in 2014, resulting in a recovery of prior bad debt provisions and the one-time non-cash provision for loan loss reserve related to a mortgage loan origination and straight-line rent write-off last year. General and administrative expenses were $3.3 million, or $628,000 higher this quarter compared with a year ago, due to increased staffing levels, higher transaction and legal costs, and the timing of certain other expenditures. Currently, we are anticipating a G&A run rate of approximately $3.2 million a quarter for 2015. As previously disclosed, during the fourth quarter of 2014, we recognized a $3.8 million gain related to the sale of 16 assisted living properties with 615 units located in Arizona, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, which were sold to Enlivant for $26.5 million. Turning to the balance sheet, during the quarter, we invested $11.8 million in properties under development and capital improvement projects at a weighted average yield of 8.9%. Capitalized interest for the quarter was $290,000. As previously announced in November, we purchased a parcel of land in Illinois for $1.4 million, which we added to a master lease with an affiliate of Anthem. Simultaneous with the purchase, we entered into a commitment to develop a 66-unit memory care property for $10.8 million, excluding the land price. Additionally, we purchased a 48-unit private pay memory care community in Castle Rock, Colorado, for $9.8 million. We added this property to an existing 12-year master lease with an affiliate of Senior Lifestyle Corporation. Clint will discuss our growing relationship with Senior Lifestyle and our 2015 investment activity momentarily. In conjunction with the acquisition, we agreed to pay a $4 million earn-out based on certain performance targets. Accordingly, we recorded a $3.2 million earn-out liability, which represents the estimated net present value of the future payment we expect to make. During the 2014 fourth quarter, we funded $1.8 million under a construction loan and received $7.5 million in mortgage loan receivable payoffs and principal amortization. As previously disclosed, we amended our unsecured credit agreement, increasing commitments to $400 million from $240 million, with the ability to increase total commitments to $600 million. The amendment also lowered the pricing grid by 25 basis points based on certain leverage ratios. Current pricing under the agreement is 125 basis points over LIBOR with an unused commitment fee of 30 basis points. Additionally, we added Credit Agricole and Union Bank to our bank group and extended the maturity of the credit agreement to October 2018 with a one-year extension at our discretion. Currently, we have borrowings of $18 million outstanding and $382 million available under our line of credit. Additionally, we prepaid $1.4 million of bonds secured by five assisted living properties in Washington. Thus, we no longer have any secured debt outstanding on our balance sheet. In the fourth quarter of 2014, we received $24.6 million in net proceeds from the sale of 600,000 shares of common stock in a registered direct placement. We granted 7,500 shares of restricted stock and received approximately $800,000 in proceeds from the exercise of 33,334 stock options. At the end of the quarter, LTC's investment grade credit metrics remained one of the best in the healthcare REIT universe, with debt to trailing 12 months normalized EBITDA of 2.6 times, a normalized trailing 12 months fixed charge coverage ratio of 6 times, and a debt to enterprise value of 15.4%. I'll now turn the call over to Clint.
Thank you, Pam. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. We are very pleased to have expanded our relationship with Senior Lifestyle, our fifth largest operator as measured by revenue, with the addition of the recently acquired memory care community in Castle Rock that Pam mentioned. The property, which was acquired in an off-market transaction from a single property owner-operator, complements both LTC and Senior Lifestyle's existing Colorado footprints. The property, which was built in 2012, demonstrates successful execution of LTC's strategy to invest in newer and more modern assets. We have enjoyed a tremendous start to 2015 by closing on transactions and entering into new development commitments relating to four properties and two parcels of land. These transactions total $74 million. First, we are very excited to establish a new relationship with Thrive Senior Living, based in Atlanta. Thrive is a growth-oriented senior living provider with a proven development track record, operating primarily in the southeastern and south central U.S. Details of our $29 million commitment to develop two seniors housing communities with Thrive are included in our earnings release. The properties are subject to a master lease that grants LTC a right to provide similar financing for certain future development projects. Next, we expanded our relationship with Prestige Healthcare, our second largest operator as measured by revenue, by executing on two transactions. First, we originated a 30-year, $11 million mortgage loan secured by a 157-bed skilled nursing center in Michigan. Second, we have committed $20 million in additional loan proceeds under our existing 15-property mortgage loan with an affiliate of Prestige for the redevelopment of two post-acute care centers located in Richmond and Rochester Hills, Michigan. As consideration for this commitment, Prestige forfeited its option to prepay up to 50% of the then outstanding loan balance. As a result of the forfeiture of this prepayment option, we expect to record $1.3 million of effective interest income related to this loan during 2015. Additional details regarding these two transactions can be found in our earnings release. Finally, we expanded our relationship with Fundamental, exercising LTC's right under a $10.6 million mortgage and construction loan to purchase a 106-bed post-acute care center located in Wisconsin for a total investment of $14 million. This property, along with four others in our portfolio currently leased to Fundamental, has been consolidated into a single master lease, further strengthening the security of our investment with Fundamental. This recent investment activity demonstrates LTC's ability to execute follow-on transactions with our existing partners while continually focusing on cultivating new relationships. Turning to our pipeline, we currently have approximately $100 million of active deals with fully executed letters of intent comprising six development projects and one preferred equity investment. We continue to see development financing playing a key role in facilitation of our near-term investment in private pay seniors housing properties, especially given the unprecedented low cap rate environment for acquisitions. In addition to the low cap rate environment, we are seeing more transactions where sellers are requiring buyers to utilize a RIDEA structure on private pay assets that are fully valued. Given the valuations seen on acquisitions and private pay assets, we continue to believe that the risk-adjusted returns afforded development projects in today's market provide a better relative long-term return proposition for our shareholders. Three of the development projects in our pipeline have been sourced through our exclusive development pipeline agreement with Anthem Memory Care to construct additional private pay memory care communities. Two of the projects will be located in the greater Chicago area. It enhances Anthem's strategic presence and growth in this key metropolitan market. The third project will be Anthem's first entrance into Southern California. These projects just mentioned will bring to 8 the total number of new development projects with Anthem since 2012. In further diversifying our operator base, LTC has sourced another new operator relationship with a company focused on developing and operating private pay memory care communities, primarily in the Southeast and certain parts of the Midwest. The letter of intent provides for LTC to enter into a purchase agreement as a forward commitment for takeout financing at a predetermined price upon issuance of a certificate of occupancy and state healthcare licensure. The two projects subject to the letter of intent are currently under construction and will be master leased to the operating company upon LTC's acquisition of the property, of each property. The sixth development project in our pipeline is with an existing customer to finance construction of a new 90-bed post-acute care center in Virginia. This transaction will be structured as a construction loan, granting LTC a right to purchase the property at a predetermined price for a period of time following the issuance of a certificate of occupancy and state health care licensure. If we elect to exercise our purchase option, the property will be added to an existing master lease. Lastly, we have entered into a letter of intent with existing partners to fund up to $26 million in a preferred equity investment to facilitate their acquisition of a seniors housing campus and a combination assisted living memory care community, both located in Arizona, which they manage on behalf of the current owner. As part of this transaction, LTC will be given a purchase option to acquire this property in the future. Although these letters of intent have been fully executed, I must caution that these transactions remain subject to due diligence and therefore may not be converted into closed investments. Should we be successful in executing on these transactions, however, our combined investments and development commitments to date for 2015 will be approaching $175 million. Turning to the portfolio, lease coverage for the trailing 12-month period ended in the third quarter 2014 remains consistent and strong. I will caveat that these following coverage metrics are derived from unaudited financial statements provided to us by our operators and are reported one quarter in arrears. EBITDARM coverage for our skilled nursing portfolio is 2.23 times, assisted living 1.62 times, and range of care 1.73 times. EBITDAR coverage, after an allocated management fee of 5% of revenues, is 1.65 times for skilled nursing, 1.39 times for assisted living, and 1.24 times for range of care. Compared with the previous quarter, occupancy has remained consistent across all property types. Occupancy for the trailing 12-month period ended in the third quarter is as follows. Assisted living, 85.6%, skilled nursing, 79.7%, and range of care, 85.1%. Our quality mix remains strong, with 55% of our underlying rental revenues coming from private pay sources. During the quarter, we had three development projects come online. Anthem Memory Care opened a 48-unit private pay memory care community in Aurora, Colorado. CareSpring opened a 143-bed post-acute care center in northern Kentucky, situated in the Cincinnati metropolitan area. And Mustang Creek Estates, a senior living provider operating in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, opened an 80-unit assisted living and memory care community in Frisco, Texas. Additionally, this week, Anthem opened our fourth project with them, a 60-unit private pay memory care community located in Westminster, Colorado. Development financing has proven to be a successful investment strategy for LTC, bringing new assets into our portfolio while committing approximately $135 million toward development over the past 3 years. With development commitments already entered into in 2015, combined with the opportunities in our pipeline, the total allocated capital for development would reach approximately $260 million since 2012 when we began our financing program. Given the operator partnerships we have established since 2012, we expect continued growth in our development financing program, strategically expanding our revenues derived from private pay sources and decreasing the average age of our portfolio. Now I'll turn the call over to Wendy for her comments.
Thank you, Clint and Pam. LTC has had a rich history of being very disciplined in making accretive investments and disciplined in structuring a company that is conservatively capitalized with low debt to enterprise levels and well-structured debt maturities. At the end of 2014, LTC had approximately $350 million of debt capacity to make strategic investments before we reached a 30% leverage to total enterprise value. And that calculation is leaving enterprise value at a static number, assuming the $350 million investments does not expand the enterprise value. This affords us significant flexibility to execute our growth strategy of expanding and diversifying our portfolio by operator, property type, and geography. Pam discussed our current bank line that was undrawn at year-end and currently has only $18 million outstanding. We are in discussions with some insurance companies to possibly establish new shelf products with them, whereby we can draw down on amounts as needed to fund investments over a long maturity, longer than our bank line maturity. This significant liquidity will also support our 2015 growth plans. As Clint mentioned, so far in 2015, we have closed transactions or entered into development commitments totaling $74 million. On our call last time, I said that our first quarter 2015 would be active, and it has been to date. Currently, we continue to favor sale-leaseback opportunities. However, as Clint mentioned, we are seeing an increase in larger transactions that require a RIDEA structure. While I can appreciate the strategy of the operators wanting to get historical top dollar for the real estate and the operations, I wonder why the operators who are closer to the actual operating business think this is a good time to sell the upside. Whatever the reason for the increase, LTC is unlikely to make an investment that would include a RIDEA structure at this time. And as Clint discussed, we believe that the disciplined building of new healthcare-related assets with certain operators is now proven a solid way to grow LTC. So far in 2015, we have welcomed one operator to our development platform and are advanced in discussions and negotiations with one other operator. When we began discussing our development initiative in 2012, we were rightfully cautious. We continued to be disciplined in our approach and are very satisfied with the success of the program in terms of construction costs, construction timelines, and operational lease-up. We can take credit for having the money available and selecting the right partners, but the actual transformation from plan through successful building and operations is totally due to the fantastic operating companies with which we have been able to partner. Additionally, in 2015, we executed LOIs to make the preferred equity investment. This would be our first such investment, and we may do other financing structures to participate in certain transactions and generate additional capital for our company in the future. We're bullish on LTC's opportunities in 2015 and look forward to reporting our successes as they happen in our quarterly calls. Incorporating into 2015 transactions closed in the fourth quarter of 2014 and transactions that have closed in the first quarter of 2015, guidance for FFO is between $2.57 and $2.59. 2014 FFO was $2.55, and we have successfully eliminated the impact of the repositioning and sales of assets done in the fourth quarter of 2014. Guidance does not include additional transactions in 2015, and we look forward to increasing guidance as we make accretive transactions in 2015. Thank you for dialing in, and I'll now open the call for questions. Denise?
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset prior to pressing the keys. If at any time your call has been addressed and you would like to withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble a roster. And our first question is from Paul Morgan from MLV. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just real quick, sorry, I missed the punchline at the very end there. Could you give the guidance again for the full year and then mention whether it incorporates your year-to-date commitments but nothing else, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so what was the number again?
$2.57 to $2.59.
Okay. So we should just think of that as kind of a run rate based on Q4 along with the G&A guidance you provided plus the investments that you've announced in January and February.
Right. It wouldn't include anything that we have under an LOI, such as the preferred investment. That would not have been included in that.
And so then it also wouldn't incorporate any particular type of, I guess, equity financing because it's not including any projects beyond what you've announced. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. On the preferred equity side, what's been the catalyst? You mentioned that you're looking to do more of these. Has it been deal-specific issues or a kind of a specific intention on your part to use these as a mechanism to acquire newer assets? Is there anything specific that you've done?
This is Clint. This preferred equity investment we're looking at right now, it really was born out of one of our relationships with our existing partners, and it was an opportunity to help them grow their platform. So it's a smaller investment for us, but it's a unique opportunity to help out some existing partners and get us familiar with the structure that we can look at possibly using in unique cases here and there. So I don't think it's not going to be a strategy that we're going to start doing a tremendous amount of investment in, but I think there is room for us to look at that as an investment strategy.
Okay. And then on the development side, maybe you could provide a little color on the recent openings, how lease up is going versus your expectation and kind of your view on the supply situation in your markets and how that's influencing the geography when you're looking for new deals over the course of the year.
Lease up actually has been going, very well at our properties. In fact, the property that just opened this week in Westminster, they're opening, it's a 60-unit community, and they already have 17 deposits and expect within the next week or two to have 17 residents move into that community. So in general, we've been very, very pleased with the lease up. In our underwriting, we've been looking at an 18 to 24-month ramp up, but it's generally been stronger than that. So we've been very happy so far with where we're at with lease up.
So there's no markets where you've been developing recently, Denver or other markets, where the new supply is enough of a concern to make you kind of look elsewhere for future deals?
Well, in the Denver market, we now have four communities in the Denver market. And I think we've done Denver. We're not looking at growing a lot more in development in that locale. So we've strategically come in, financed that market, and now we're looking at other geographies with Anthem as an example.
Okay. Great. And then just lastly, you didn't spend too much time talking about investment opportunities on the SNF side. How are you thinking about, pricing and the investment pipeline there and your appetite for acquisitions?
Yeah, we're still very bullish in looking at skilled opportunities, and we have some in our pipeline that we're looking at. Pricing is, probably somewhere in the 8.5% to 9% range for skilled assets of a certain quality. I think larger transactions, as we mentioned on the call last time, could command a cap rate probably south of 8.5. And we've seen some larger SNF transactions that are on the market. So it's something that we're still actively looking at and think that the risk-adjusted return on skilled is very positive.
And we're looking forward to possibly building another transitional skilled property with our operator CareSpring. We opened the one in Cold Spring, Kentucky, and it's way ahead of its projections of occupancy. And they have the CON to build another one in Boone Spring. They're working on getting all of that entitled and everything. And so, we'd be investing a significant amount of money in building another skilled nursing property, which we're very, very happy to be doing with them.
Also, we've seen a number of portfolios, too, on the skilled side that, our older antiquated product, 1960, 70 vintage properties, and that type of skilled nursing asset is probably not what we're looking at bringing into the portfolio. So there's a range of a skilled product that is on the market.
Great, thanks.
And our next question comes from Michael Carroll from RBC Capital Markets.
Thanks. I know you guys touched on this during the call a little bit, but can you kind of give us an overview of what you're seeing in the sale-leaseback market today and how many of those deals are actually in the investment pipeline you're tracking currently?
Sure. Well, I think if you look at it between sale-leaseback on the private pay assets as well as on skilled nursing, as we talked about on private pay assets in our prepared remarks, the valuations on those make it very challenging to put those into a triple net lease structure. So I would say outside of unique opportunities with some of our existing customers on sale leasebacks where our partners want to see coverage left in the deal, that works. So we'll probably see more of that on the skilled nursing side as far as the triple net leases.
Then how much of that is in your pipeline right now?
As far as
sale
leasebacks?
Yep.
We're looking at on the sale leaseback side, I would say probably 30 to 40%.
Okay.
$30 million.
And then I know, Wendy, I think last time we talked, you were pretty encouraged about some SNF portfolios that are out there. And can you give us an update on that and the likelihood of LTC able to get one of those deals?
Yes. There were a couple of deals that went to REITs that heretofore had claimed they don't like SNF assets. So the other bigger players have come into the market and are buying the portfolio type of assets.
So those portfolios, are you still tracking any portfolios that you may be interested in, or are those off the market now?
They're off the market now.
Okay. And then can you kind of give us the timing of the redevelopment projects for the, Prestige? When will those projects kick off?
Brent Chappell, our Senior VP of Portfolio Investment and Portfolio Management, is here. Brent, do you want to talk about timing on those projects?
Yeah, the first of which will probably kick off here in the next just a few months. That's in the Richmond location. And then Rochester Hills, I think just due to the entitlement process and some of the other regulatory processes they'll have to go through, will probably be within the next 9 months or so breaking ground.
Okay. And then finally, can you give us some color on the lease inducements that were paid? Why did you have to provide inducements, and is this common practice?
As we're looking at it, focusing on development and working with operating companies, we're trying to find ways to put these development projects together and create pipelines with customers. The lease inducement really is a function of looking at what otherwise would be viewed as a construction loan and including, lease-up cost and working capital into the construction loan. So it's really financing some of the working capital needs for the operating partners post CFO. So there's a couple ways of doing that. One is doing the lease inducements. The other is doing deferred rent on the projects. With these customers that we're working with on these specific projects, doing the lease inducement in those transactions made more sense for those projects.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're just including it basically in basis, although that lease inducement gets recorded, it's accounted for differently than if you were including it actually in the property costs on our balance sheet.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And our next question is from John Roberts from Hillard Lyons. Please go ahead.
Morning, Wendy.
Good morning, John.
I'm sorry about this. I actually we had some construction outside the window, so my speakerphone kept cutting in and out. When I picked up, it hung up on me, so I had to dial back in, so I may have missed some of this. But Pam, you mentioned the G&A being more expensive, but the interest expense also seemed to be up a little bit more than I would have anticipated, given that you really didn't have an increase in debt year over year. Was that just a function of taking money off the line and putting it fixed rate, or was there something else there?
No, that's it. It was terming out the line with the $30 million of senior unsecured notes that we had under our shelf agreement with Prudential.
Super. And more big picture, Wendy, it looks like you've really accelerated your acquisitions here in Q1. Is that something that maybe will continue going forward? And is that a function of maybe getting the Enliven issue out of the way, which probably took some of your ability to look at these things while you're working on that, and we might see an increased level of acquisitions going forward because of that?
Yes.
Okay. And finally, it's interesting you mentioned about, first of all, the RIDEA issue. I agree with you 100%. I guess maybe the guys who are doing this don't remember what you and I went through in 2000, 2001 with our conversations back in those days. So certainly I think that's, at least from my perspective, a much better strategy than what I'm seeing with all the other REITs getting into the operating side of things. But maybe I can have you comment a little bit about consolidation in the sector right now. You know, you've got most recently OHI and Aviv. What's your thoughts on that, given what we're seeing is somewhat of a consolidating issue in the industry right now, and your discussions about maybe some of the big guys looking more at the SNF area than they had in the past?
Mm-hmm. Well, the big guys, even though they seem to be able to do $2 billion of transactions in any at any time, still need fodder to feed the machine. And their $2 billion transactions are fairly expensive in terms of what they pay and what yield they can get. So since the skilled nursing industry has seriously evolved over the last 10 years, and there are a lot of good assets out there and newer assets, and if you can get an 8 yield on something like that, we always knew that they'd turn their attention back to the larger transactions. There's still a ton of assets out there owned by the smaller operators who would not be of interest maybe to the bigger players. In terms of transactions that are merging transactions, I think each one of them, the companies had a strategic reason for doing those transactions, Aviv and Omega and NHP and Ventas. Right now, our strategic direction is to grow the company as we're growing it, adding new assets, adding some accretive investments through the sale-leaseback transactions, you know, and just continuing to grow the company.
Great. Thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome, John.
The next question is from Daniel Bernstein from Stifel. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess it's good morning. Sorry, not quite afternoon yet. So going on a little bit more on the skilled nursing transactions and what you're seeing out there and what you want to invest in, are you looking to do deals with operators that are, you know, more on the higher acuity side on skilled nursing, you know, or are you looking for more, you know, operators that have more of a balance mix between Medicaid and Medicare? Just trying to think about how are you thinking about, you know, we're getting some proposals on site neutral payments between IRFs and skilled nursing, and how do you think you want to position your portfolio and investments for changes in that healthcare system?
Sure, Dan, that's a good question. I would say higher acuity, but our goal really is to focus on identifying and partnering with providers you know, that have regional focus, you know, have a core team that are really looking at where is the skilled nursing business going, and trying to position themselves to take advantage of opportunities as we're seeing an evolving environment as far as, you know, whether it's, you know, managed Medicaid, Medicare Advantage, going into some type of ACO payment environment, bundling. So we're really looking at the company and where those companies are going and how they're looking at the business. I think when you look at companies like that, you find companies that tend to focus more on higher acuity. Now, as far as looking at buildings that would only provide service for transitional care, that's all Medicare or HMO, you know, we'd have to probably look a little farther about what markets those are in. So I think having a component of, you know, Medicaid is still, you know, a viable aspect for a long-term successful business in the skilled nursing space, but and we're looking for newer, modernized assets as well, not the older 60, 70 vintage properties.
Okay. I assume that's a lot of what you're doing on the development side, particularly is to put some more modernization and you know, modernization into those facilities relative to those older ones you're not.
Absolutely, buying properties that may be a little older, but being able to buy them at the right price to deploy additional capital to renovate, modernize, redevelop. You know, looking for unique opportunities that may come about with partners on opportunities like that.
Okay, and then can you talk a little bit more about the average age of the portfolio and how that's changed over the last few years, where you want it to head? I just want to think about some actual numbers on those comments that you made earlier in the call.
I'm not sure we have our current average age after taking out the assets that we sold at the end, but we'll figure that out, Dan, and let you know.
Yeah, we can always get back. Yeah, just curious as to where it's gone and
sure.
Maybe even by what difference where it is on by asset class, that skilled nursing and assisted living.
Well,
where it's been and where it is.
Some of the loans that have paid off in the portfolio, those were typically on older assets. And then really the skilled nursing product we've invested in the last 3 to 4 years has the newer vintage, as we've discussed on our earnings call, plus development. So in general, that's we're decreasing overall the average age of the portfolio.
Okay. And then also just going back to those Rydea comments, those are was writing down, that's pretty strongly worded negative vibe against doing Rydea transactions. But also it sounded like, if I was going to take this correctly, that you don't understand, you don't understand why the operator would do that deal. And so just trying to put on the operator hat, are the sellers of those portfolios, are they large regionals, are they private equity backed, or is even the smaller operator wanting to do Rydea deals trying to get the top price regardless of whether they give away some of the upside or not?
Well, the ones that we've heard about are some of them have equity backing that want to get out, and others are just big packages that come to market. So, and I fully understand why the operator wants to cash out today and have no risk of the future. And it just as a philosophy, I don't understand putting your future in the hands of somebody who's now got all of his money off the table and has a small upside, but he has to work really hard to get it.
And one thing we're seeing on that, Dan, on the Rydea structure deals, is typically the operating partners in the deal, they have some participation in a liquidity event upon sale, but a lot of times that participation is not being reinvested. So the Rydea structure could work depending on how much of that liquidity event remains in the deal that aligns interest with us and that operating partner. But we're not seeing a lot of transactions under Rydea where those dollars are being left.
A lot of the Rydea deals, you see that the operator simply doesn't want to keep an equity stake in the TRS.
And they're full. So the upside is rate increases, cost controls, possibly some. I mean, when Rydea came into existence 4 or 5 years ago, I think the earlier transactions had some upside, like, buying assets that were 70-80% occupied. So as occupancy went up, it was a good investment. But the ones that we're seeing are full or effectively full, and the upside doesn't seem to be that achievable.
Okay. Would I take that to mean that you think the fundamentals in senior housing have come closer to a peak, or is it simply we've come off the bottom and the upside for you is just not great enough? Even if the fundamentals are still good, the upside is off the bottom is not great enough for you anymore.
It's not great enough for us.
Okay. Appreciate the caller. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dan.
And just as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Our next question is from Jordan Sadler from KeyBanc Capital Market. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Looking for a little bit of clarification on the guidance. Maybe you could help me bridge from the fourth quarter, the 64 cents of FFO to the 258 midpoint. I'm sure there's some puts and takes that I feel like I'm missing, one of which specifically is the Prestige payment of the $1.3 million. Is that embedded in the guidance, that payment that you're booking in 2015? And then maybe any other puts and takes that might weigh on that number, because I'm looking at the $83 million of commitments completed to date, and I feel like it might be biased a little bit higher than that. So what am I missing?
Well, starting out, the 1.3 isn't a payment. It's the recognition of effective interest now that the purchase option is gone.
Payment option.
So that 1.3, is that hitting all at once?
That's over. That's in 2015.
Okay, so that's,
so it's similar
that's
to,
amortized
yeah,
over the years.
It's similar to straight-line rent, so it's going to be amortized, you know, over the four quarters. And additionally, because all the development that's come online and the new leases, we have an uptick in straight-line rents, and that's all in the supplemental, I think it's like page 15. But it's essentially about $4 million more of straight-line rent. So you're seeing FFO grow as you would any time you enter into a new lease. The FFO is larger than the FAD because of the way the straight-line rent works.
Right. So, so the, I guess the 64 cents that you did in the quarter of FFO is 256 annualized, and the 1.3 million is going to be an FFO as well, amortized, but it's going to be an FFO, an extra 3.5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So that puts you at 259.5, assuming nothing happens post 12/31, and so I.
You have the rent reduction from the sale of the Enlivant assets. That's probably the
That's the biggest. That's the biggest drag still.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then, as it relates to the pipeline, any incremental insight you can lend into the? It sounds like there's 90 plus million plus or minus that's under letter of intent, in terms of the likelihood or expected timing.
I think I described those, this is Clint, I described those as active deals. We have letters of intent. I mean, I think these are all very viable transactions that we've been actively engaged with these parties. Our pipeline is larger than that. We have other, you know, deal activity, but these are the portion of the pipeline that you know, is actively being, you know, negotiated, and we're moving towards towards execution on this. And, you know, an example, three of the projects are, you know, with Anthem, which is a partner of ours, and we have been working on that under our exclusive development pipeline agreement. So those are very real deals. So we feel good about where we're at on the, you know, approximate $100 million of the active pipeline. Again, things could change. It always happens, but we try to give you guys as much insight and color into what we're working on. And you know, there are other deals behind that that we're working on as well, but we feel pretty comfortable about where these are at, and we're working as quickly as possible to get these transactions closed. And so, if anything changes, we will update you on, you know, next quarter. But I do caveat when we talk about this in more detail that things could change. But as of right now, they seem you know, likely.
Okay, that's helpful. And lastly, I guess Wendy, maybe coming back to that RIDEA comment or discussion. Do these valuations compel you in any other way regarding your own existing portfolio? So maybe you're, you know, unlikely to buy one of these RIDEA deals, but is there an opportunity? Is pricing getting to a point where there may be incremental opportunity to pair any assets?
We're constantly looking at our portfolio in terms of sale of assets, and over the years we've sold some assets almost every year. Right now we're not actively looking at selling any of the assets, but we're certainly, you know, we're certainly open to looking at that. We could probably sell all of our memory care assets for three times what we've got into them, but that's not our current strategy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And showing no further questions, this will conclude our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Denise, and thank you all for joining us today. As we said, we're very active in the year. We expect to be active all year long and look forward to talking to you after our first quarter and giving you some more color on what we see for 2015. Again, thank you and have a great day.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.